I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I believe external agencies will always exist for the end of time for this reason and this reason only. It's because a CMO, a chief brand officer, is going to be able to point the finger somewhere else.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Marketing Vanguard podcast. I'm Jenny Rooney at Adweek, and I'm thrilled today to be joined by David Lee. David is the Chief Creative Officer of Squarespace. David, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited to talk to you, David, because, you know, I think what you're doing is just so fascinating and interesting. I think what you're going to lend to this conversation, you know, I typically talk to CMOs in equivalent titles, and obviously they're making decisions about brand strategy, marketing strategy, how they engage with their consumers, where they need to place bets and take risks. Obviously, as Chief Creative Officer at Squarespace, you're really bringing the heft of creativity to the company at a time when, you know, we have seen so much shift as far as, you know, how many capabilities need to be in-house versus how much needs to be outsourced to an agency. I think those are all things that are perennial issues that marketers deal with all the time. You obviously came from the agency side, and we're going to get into that in a minute. And, you know, you've brought that prowess to Squarespace for a number of years now. So let's start by bring everybody up to speed with, you know, you personally, your history, and sort of what led you to Squarespace. I mean, because arguably this was your first move to client side, arguably, right?
It was. It was the first and longest tenure at one company, both at the same time. So I just passed my 11-year work anniversary.
Wow.
At Squarespace.
That's almost unheard of these days. Yeah.
Hey, that's a lifetime. That is completely unheard of. Look, I think the easiest way I can explain how I ended up at Squarespace, you know, as someone who spent the majority of my career or the first chapter of my career on the agency side and working at really great creative agencies, design studios, and worldwide networks, I think everyone at a certain point gets to a point where they're trying to find a little bit more purpose in the work that they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And just so I'm clear for your audience, I wouldn't have changed anything about the first chapter of my career. Mm-hmm. Working on the agency side, you get to live vicariously through all these different brands, their problems. You get to walk the halls with some of the most creative and smartest people in the business. But for me...
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, those agencies are TBWA, Wieden & Kennedy, AKQA. I mean, these are storied creative agencies, right? So...
I agree, and I appreciate it. And it's... sometimes I forget. It's been so long now. It's been 11 years I've been out of the game. But
Sid Lee, even. I mean, yes, this is a rich agency history for you, for sure.
I appreciate it. And I learned a lot, which is why I wouldn't have changed anything about the first half of my career. Yeah. I just got to a point where I woke up one day. I was just traveling around the globe, pitching kind of new business, going to different office here, there. And I had this epiphany that if I was going to do this for the next 10 years, I wanted to make sure that it was for a brand and a company that I cared about. And ultimately, mm-hmm. when I started to look at a lot of the brands that I was working on during the agency world, to be completely fair, there were a lot of them that I didn't have a lot of affinity for or I didn't really care so much about. So I made a decision, probably at the height of my agency career, to take a gamble on a tiny startup called Squarespace, which, you know, it was very much in startup mode. It was much smaller than it is today, and people thought I was crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a worldwide executive creative director of a 12,000 employee network at that point. And people thought I was doing career suicide, to be completely fair. Mm-hmm. But I had the entrepreneurial itch. I wanted to try and take a swing at being an entrepreneur and finding a place that I believe in the purpose, I believe in the mission. I wanted to be able to get up in the morning and hang my head up high and walk to work with my chest out proud. And that ended up being Squarespace. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. I've been there for 11 years and have seen it in the ups and downs, the highs and lows. And I feel like I got my MBA the real way.
I love that. Well, talk about Squarespace. I mean, you know, you said when you joined, it was just a really early days. I mean, it's a website development company, correct? Fundamentally, I'm sure it's expanded and grown and evolved, but talk a little bit about the company itself.
That is a very accurate description of it. I tend to try and, well, I guess it's part of my job to try and make that feel bigger and elevate the brand to kind of like a higher altitude. I think what got me interested in Squarespace was the fact that, if you think about it, this was started many decades ago, almost two decades ago, right? And when the founders started this company, this is when the internet was the worldwide. The internet was the wild, wild west. It was the most unconsidered place in the world, and he wanted to set out and create something that was an all-in-one platform where you can do everything in one place. But more importantly, I think the value proposition was the bigger insight here for me, in the sense that he wanted to create a design system and a web publishing platform that allowed people to create things that they were proud of, that were representative of their personal or business brand, right? Because he believed that eventually in the future, that your first impressions will happen online, first and foremost, which I think that bet is 100% true. And the second thing, he believed that it's almost like your legacy and that first impression is going to be what returns from a search result online. Mm-hmm. And the insight there was like, what do you want people to see when they find you, right? So he placed a massive effort, massive amount of emphasis on your brand, design, and creativity, because he believed that this wasn't just about putting things out there, that this was about putting things out there that were representative of who you are. Right. Yeah. And I kind of like really resonated with that for all the things that we mentioned before as part of my career and part of being a creative in this business. So that's ultimately the reason that I ended up there.
I love that. And it's so that link is so obvious, right? Once you describe kind of who you are, what makes you tick, and then also to your point, that higher purpose of Squarespace, it totally connects.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very few places. I always tell people, you get to learn a lot about the company by the first elevator pitch and the origin story. Yeah. And the origin story has to come from whoever conceived this company in the first place. So I always tell people when they're looking to either jump to the brand side or go to a startup and what have you, try and find the original elevator pitch delivered by the founder, him or herself, because you're going to learn a lot about what they care about from that original elevator pitch. And number two, which goes into like org design, which I believe is one of the places where you can make one chess move that unlocks so much. You've learned a lot about who a founder and CEO puts him or herself, the first concentric circle around them. You learn a lot about the org design of a company because it'll basically telegraph what that person actually cares about the most as well.
I love that. And that's so I need to go back and read the elevator pitch for Adweek 45 years ago, because by the way, we're celebrating 45 years this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So now talk about the creativity that you've used to tell the Squarespace story. I mean, honestly, I think everybody knows you've used the world's biggest stage, the Super Bowl, to make the brand accessible, to tell a story, to make a splash. I mean, all the things, all the reasons why Super Bowl is the Super Bowl of advertising, seems like you've used that. So talk a little bit about that, and how does that fit into your overall brand and creative strategy for Squarespace?
Yeah. I mean, I just want to set the record clear. We do a lot of stuff outside of Super Bowl.
That gets a lot of attention.
But there's so many different marketing initiatives that we do at Squarespace that I just want to set the record straight. I think Super Bowl for us, the reason why we continually invest in that pop culture moment is there's some obvious reasons. I think the media landscape is quite fractured right now. It's really hard to get that many eyeballs in like one moment in time, whilst it being an expensive moment. Some would argue it's actually cheaper than a lot of the investments that companies and brands will make if you actually kind of start to collate them all together. Mm-hmm. It's the only pop culture moment where people even care about advertising. Yeah. Like, think about that for a second. Advertising, and I think we need to like rebrand that name eventually, but is not something that people love, right? So to have a pop culture moment where there's a game within the game, where brands show up to compete, to celebrate each other, and to put your best foot forward creatively, there's not a lot of moments like that in our business and from a media standpoint. I think the reason why it makes sense for us purely from a brand perspective is that if you look at our segment, our category, and you know who we are as a company, there's a lot of things that we do that are like top down, and there's a lot of things that we do bottom up, right? And any modern brand has to do a combination of the two today. Mm-hmm. Just because you see an ad from Squarespace does not mean you're going to go trial and start a business the next day. It takes time. Yeah. That might happen a week from now. It might happen 6 months from now. It might happen 5 years from now, right? Because a lot of times when we do these big brand awareness campaigns, you're not really too sure who you're talking to. Yeah. But all we're trying to do with things like Super Bowl, which is like the tip of the iceberg from a brand awareness campaign standpoint, is that we want to be top of mind when they're ready to take that first step. Yeah. And they're ready to actually start that. And we don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but when it does, we want to make an emotional attachment so that we're remembered when they are ready to do that, whether that's with a wink, a bit of humor, or you know something more poetic that we put out into the world. And then we combine that with a lot more tactical and marketing initiatives that are attributable, and we know if it's working right now because we know people have intent at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. So I think any modern brand has to kind of do the combination of the two.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Talk a little bit about in-housing. Obviously, I mean, you have full capabilities in-house at Squarespace, right? So I think over the years we've seen swings on the marketer side. You know, as I referenced earlier, there have been trends towards in-housing. There have been trends away from it. A lot of it stems from cost issues and capabilities issues and also talent issues and, frankly, just the concept of creative ideas. Where should the best creative ideas come from? What do marketers get wrong do you think, in terms of building up in-house capabilities? And where do you think it makes sense and where do you think it doesn't for brands?
So I have a very strong opinion about this. Okay. Obviously, I'm biased based off of, you know, the last 11 years. So just to set the stage, I haven't used an agency in 9 of the 11 years during my tenure at Squarespace. Wow. And this is not because I feel that there aren't great external agencies in the world. You've named a couple that I've worked with in the past. And I'm also going to set another record straight. I believe external agencies will always exist for the end of time for this reason and this reason only. It's because a CMO, a chief brand officer, is going to be able to point the finger somewhere else.
Yeah.
When something goes wrong.
Yeah.
There's an accountability shift that can be passed on to someone else. Yeah. And the problem is that most people start an internal agency for the wrong reason. They do it for cost efficiencies, or they just want to give the lower funnel work to it. And then they give out all the bigger briefs to some of the storied external agencies that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that that is the wrong reason to start one. And I think that's why a lot of brands who do start one, it ends up flaming out. Mm. You're not going to attract the right talent to do the work that you want to do if you're not giving them a chance to do full funnel work that a lot of the external agencies do. And even if you do decide to attract good talent, you know, I'll put a timestamp on how long that person will stay there if they're not given that opportunity, right? So we decided to do that because A, creativity is a first class citizen at Squarespace. I sit on the exec team and we have a very unorthodox org structure where we have a marketing department, but we have a creative department, but there's a Venn diagram and there's an overlap where the magic happens, but we're both our own departments and creativity reports to the founder and CEO, right? Mm. So it is actually a first class citizen. So I know that's unorthodox, but that's what I mean.
A little bit because I guess the question is this is an extreme way to put it, but you're divorcing creativity from marketing in that, are you?
I don't look at it as a divorce. I actually think our CMO and I actually have a very strong working relationship, and we built an exec team that's complementary to each other, right? Okay. And I think a lot of this comes from self-awareness in terms of not everyone can be both good at everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're self-aware of that, then you can fill in the gaps and you can build teams accordingly that complement each other. There's always going to be a little bit of overlap in that Venn diagram. But what I see with a lot of exec teams is that they end up hiring people that have very similar skill sets, right? Who have a little bit of an ego, right? Mm-hmm. And a little territorialism of how things work.
Yeah.
And that's a recipe for a disaster.
Yeah.
Right. So for us, it stemmed from how the founder and CEO wanted to, kind of set up what that first concentric circle is around him. And I mentioned creativity is a first class citizen at the company. And it made sense for us to do an in-house agency because if you think about it, we're a DIY product.
Yeah.
Our entire product is about putting out a platform where other people can DIY their own brand. It makes sense for us to DIY our own marketing and creative.
So interesting.
Right. It's part of the origin story. Right.
It's a little bit meta.
it's also very meta, but I would argue if, you know, you're a CPG brand or like what have you, you have multiple product lines, you have multiple business units to try and create an in-house agency that does A to Z, everything that we do might not make sense. Right. And again, you have to also be a little bit audacious and really brave to try and build something at that level and to look yourself in the mirror if something stinks.
Yeah.
Because you have ultimately all accountability for that.
So it's interesting. I love that. And it's such a good way of looking at it and articulating it. There's also the concept that creativity can be defined and manifests in so many different ways, right? So I think we as marketers, you know, and brand leaders, we obviously just assume creativity means advertising or creativity means, you know, but I mean, creativity in, to your point, org structure, you know, how the C-suite set up, how, you know, process. There's creativity. So I have to think that is the work you're doing informing more than just the sort of external facing advertising and marketing?
Well, I certainly like to, I certainly hope so. I think you mentioned something which I've always had a little opinion on. I think the word creativity is misunderstood because I believe all humans are creative. And for some odd reason, an advertising industry claimed that word and put it into a department to try and like explain the value add and the skill set of what a department is. And I am, you know, I'm too deep into this business to try and change it like otherwise at this point. However, here's a big statement on why I believe creativity should have a seat at the adults table of the conversation. I believe creativity is the only job left.
Interesting. Okay. Expand.
I believe because of all the things that we're all scared and talking about today, the only value add humans will have, not a creative department per se, the only value add humans will have in the future is our creative thought, our emotional intelligence, what have you. Because if you think about it, with all the AI and all the large language models that are happening and all the disruption that everyone's talking about today, logic, analytical thinking, data analysis, research, all these different things are better done by machines. Yeah. I actually say, great. And if you think about it, imagination, creative, critical thought, emotional intelligence, those are going to be really hard things to automate away. I'm not saying it's impossible. And there are a lot of tests
emotion,
and things out there.
Emotion, there's, passion. I mean, just like, yeah, all those things.
But if it, and if it gets there, well, it's the dystopian sci-fi future where we'll all be building bunkers ourselves anyways. So it'll be game over. So I'm actually of the big belief that creativity not only needs a seat at the adults table, i.e. the executive table, I think everyone's going to, the only job in the world will be creative jobs. Mm. Right. So it would behoove any Fortune 100, 500 company or a startup not to have people whose pedigree is about coming up with original thought, innovative solutions, creative storytelling that leads to that wink, that tear, right? Pushing at the emotion intelligence of human beings. It, that sounds like a very archaic structure of a company to not try and elevate that to the adult table of the conversation. So I've always been a big proponent of everyone's creative. Everyone comes up with ideas all the time, right? This is what makes us unique and different, right? I have an opinion on how you get to good ideas, but that's probably for a different conversation. The so to your point of that full circle moment, I hope what I'm am bringing value add isn't just beyond the artifacts that we put out into the world that people see, but more of a mind shift on why creativity is not only a first-class citizen, it's this is what everyone's job should be in the future.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. So provocative. And I'm sure everybody listening, it's going to give them pause in the best way. This has been so fascinating. A couple last quick questions for you, David. One is just a fun one I like to ask, and it's truly about your leadership style. And I am curious to ask you this one, especially because I think there's some a lot of what you've talked about is rather unorthodox or a different approach. So the question is, imagine yourself, you're a player on a soccer team. Are you the striker who's trying to score the goals against the opposition? Are you at the midfield line trying to kind of be that connective tissue between the offense and defense? Or are you at the defensive line trying to protect your goal at all costs from the competition?
I like this question. That was that came out of left field. I have
There you go.
I have a... Oh, I wasn't even thinking about that, but yes. Yes, there was a pun intended there. I have a... Depending on where I am in the life cycle and my narrative arc of my career, I would respond to that differently. I think I am a competitive person, though. So just, I like the sports analogy, like full stop. I think when you're in the beginning of your career, you want to score the goals. You are trying to score and you want the glory. You want the crowd, like, you know, you want to win that award of the, you know, the golden boot, like, and what have you. I think the older you get a little bit wiser, and you decide that you might want to play in midfield, right? And to be that connected tissue between the offense and the defense. I think that even older you get, you realize is that all you're doing is blocking and tackling for people and putting them up on a pedestal. So defense now starts to make a little bit more sense.
Wow. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think as you get even older, this is where it forks in the road. Some people go into management position, like a coach, and some people decide to retire, right? Because it's proven just because you're an all-star at your team does not mean you're going to be a great coach, yeah. right? There's a lot of people who have been prolific scorers, like MVPs and what have you, but have never decided to take the coach's seat because that's fundamentally a very, very different job. And then there's even people who go into the GM suite. I would say where I am in my narrative arc right now is definitely either playing defense or the coach's seat. Sometimes I play the player coach mentality where I'm still on the field because I like to get my hands dirty. And then other times I'm sitting on the sidelines cheering on the team. That's kind of where I would say right now.
Love it. And I love how you sort of you went through the progression of the positions, you know, during the course of your career. Yeah. Last quick question that I ask everybody is who's next? You know, who is somebody else that you would recommend we interview for the Marketing Vanguard podcast? Somebody you could know super, super well, or somebody who you admire from afar and you have never, ever spent time with them or let alone met them, but you like the work they're doing. You think either their brand work or their leadership style is something that you emulate or you admire. Who should we interview next for Marketing Vanguard?
I have two people that come to mind, and I'll let you decide or the audience decide who's better. The first one is a dear friend of mine. Well, they're both dear friends. I just saw her not that long ago here in LA, Colleen DeCourcy.
Oh, yes.
Who I worked with at TBWA and has been not only a good friend, but a mentor as I've kind of just been trying to figure out my own career. You know, obviously, for the audience, she was the ex-president and global CCO of Wieden Kennedy. Yeah. I used to work at Wieden Kennedy in London, so we have that attachment. But she's also come out of retirement to get back on the horse and take on the role of both CCO and CMO at Snap, actually.
Yeah, so cool.
And the reason why I think it'd be interesting, because she has a little bit of a similar challenge to me, where she actually got the CMO duties, but she calls herself the CCO. She did not want to call herself the CMO. So I'm not going to unpack that. I'll let you kind of do that. So that's one.
Okay. Perfect.
I think another one is another good friend and mentor, Ray Inamoto.
Oh, yes.
Actually, who I also...
I haven't heard that name in a while, but I love that.
Yeah. He is another one who we still talk back from the AKQ days when... AKQA days when I was in San Francisco. So he has his own agency slash consultancy slash design studio. He explains it much better than I do. But we've been catching up recently because he's actually turned into a thought leader and is almost like a creator at this time, where he is actually, if you follow him on LinkedIn or on social media and what have you, I just did a podcast with him. He is putting out some really thought-provoking insights into our industry, our business, and he's bringing on some really interesting people into his own podcast, but also is someone that I worked with for a very long time and is, still in this industry, you know, trying to fight the good fight. So those would be two people.
I think those are interesting. Fantastic suggestions, David. Love that. I will reach out to both of them and, listen, thank you so much. This has been so enlightening, and I just love your views on things. And I think, you know, you're certainly causing me to stop and think about some things, and I know you will do the same for our listeners. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I look forward to talking with you again sometime very, very soon. Thanks, David Lee.
Would love to. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Vanguard, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Jordan Pratano, executive produced by Al Manarino and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGibney at Boutwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcasts. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com. Thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.